Hello, hello, and welcome to the 28th Metroplexity Podcast. This is Kinnack, also known as Landon Winkler, coming to you from sunny Columbus, Ohio. And I will dive right in with some questions. All right, let's see what we've got. Batch right up from Barton 26. Why is Faesite so clashed by Ocean Eyes? Is it thematic, or is there some major source of Fae content that we've missed? You'd have to drill down a little bit more as far as that question with why you think it's outclassed. If you're talking about the differences between sushi and mushrooms, there are just a lot more fish than mushrooms in the game at this point. So, and the crafting bonuses, so to speak, synergize quite well with the bonus you get from Ocean Sight. If your concern is just food-related, obviously there will be many more mushrooms and a lot more sushi as the game goes forward, so I wouldn't worry about that one too much. Is there still some hidden content lurking in the Black Book? I think you still got two things. One of them insanely buried that I fault no one for not finding, and one of them just a little tricky that honestly wouldn't surprise me if it took every bit as long to find out. There's still some content, little shards here and there. Is there a finite number of sites in Subversion? Could a coordinator team of evildoers using Trask system completely destroy Subversion as we know it? As we know it, yes. There are not... You won't fail to find a site with the hacking search tools. So, you might fail to find a site that you don't already have, right? But you won't completely just like, oh, there's no websites out there anymore. It would definitely change the landscape substantially, but it would not actually prevent people from finding new sites. Are you surprised at the level of viral sites still active in Subversion? Not particularly. It can still sort of spread around, so that's not terribly surprising as it stands. Will we ever see an unearthly item purely for hacking? The Midgard player was pretty close, but if I were going to do that, it would not surprise me to see one around the time that I do the hacking revamp that I'm planning for hopefully later this year, sort of on the same theory as I did the tackle box, sort of just a new unearthly item to tie into the content that I'm working on. Why does the Ragman have organs? Why wouldn't he have organs? Does the Ragman's more powerful ultimate form have organs? I feel like it shouldn't, but he should. Let me double check here real quick. Should not have organs, and is now deorganed. But the normal form of the Ragman feels, at least in my opinion, like it should. In a previous podcast, you mentioned that we might be missing something big with the toxic items, Venom's Angel, Toxic Crystal, Toxic Osmosis. Any hints? I think someone actually found at least half of that, the other half being a little less immediately obvious. There's a sort of there's an underlying question about mysteries in that there are a lot of interactions between equipment and techniques, and a lot of equipment that people don't use a lot, and a lot of techniques that people don't use a lot. And depending on how those interactions line up, you know, if it's an interaction between equipment that nobody ever uses and a technique that nobody ever uses, it's going to take some pretty dedicated spading to find it. If, you know, on the other hand, it's between, you know, equipment that people always use and a technique that people always use, it'll be found pretty quickly. So, that's not helpful, particularly, but there's a sort of, and some of that isn't entirely planned in advance. There are just so many interactions that some of them fall into the nobody will find this just through sheer volume. Why do we shine with our own inner light when we oppose a certain tech from the dark specter? Man, I wrote that a long time ago. Let me pull up the actual combat message you're referencing here. Yeah, that is an explanation for why it is failing to choke you. I think it should be not entirely strange, unless I screwed up some code. Let me double check here. I know that this is wall-to-wall excitement. Yeah, it's just a... you're slipping away from that in a very non-standard way. But I think if you experiment and see when that happens and when it doesn't, it should be pretty obvious what exactly is going on there. Let's see. Some questions from Goldess. So what's left to find with spaceship cargo pants? Tried using 243 skeleton bones, an axiological step, and nothing special happened. Are we going about this the wrong way? I mean, they're sort of putting an upper cap on that. There is still some stuff to find with the pants, though. Pretty neat interaction. Not unrelated to the skeleton bones. But fairly well hidden, as I recall. I don't actually remember the trigger right now, to tell you the honest truth, so I can't give you a great hint, but there is still something buried there. Any more secrets with the Jade Amulet? There is still some stuff left there to be discovered, yeah. Obviously, you've gone a lot deeper in there. Are there any easy-to-get skills we haven't discovered yet? Obviously, it depends on what you mean by easy-to-get. There are a couple of sort of branches off certain quests that I'm surprised have not been found. They're sort of... they're sneaky. I mean... I'm not surprised that they weren't found immediately, right? But surprised that they're still not uncovered. It's one of the things I've gone back and planned for, like, this code works, right? I'm not embarrassing myself. Yeah, it looks... so there are still a couple that you could comment for. Burning ectoplasm, what does it do, and who does it work for? Mostly sets you on fire, as I recall. And, I mean, you are its creator, right? One would assume that it worked for you, or, you know, whoever crafted you the item. Pretty sure burning ectoplasm is tradable, isn't it? Not going to double-check that one, but it's sort of irrelevant. But I would imagine that it works for its creator. That's sort of the usual theme with such things. How will skills depending on having a certain item equipped mirror gazing work when skill priming is a thing? Will the mirror appear in a player's inventory when they are set? That is actually already coded into mirror gazing. And if I recall correctly, the call skill does not actually require the crown. Pretty sure. So it's just mirror gazing. But yeah, that'll be handled on a skill by skill basis. So yeah, I wouldn't worry about that one. And a whole batch of questions from Al. First up, so how are you? Gory details, please. I should reread my intro to this. So this is the intro to the questions thread. If you're not reading this along with the original questions, because I know that that's not always the way this is going to be enjoyed, hopefully, or, you know, listened to and picked over for clues, despite the fact that I'm rambling bago pants. So here's my original intro. Looks like it's about time for another Halloween podcast spectacular. Feel free to ask for vagueness on that or any other topic that piques your interest in this thread. I've been working through some personal issues for the last month or so. People want me to get into the gory details. I'm not really a very private person, so feel free to ask. Otherwise, I'll keep the emo to myself. Cheers, Kinnack. That's what he's referring to. So, how are you, gory details, please? Those are the gory details he's referring to. So, if you still don't want emo, I guess you'll have to fast forward through this section, which is slightly more challenging. Let's see. I mean, 2012 has not been a great year. I think I agree with my wife in that she would like just veto 2012 and retroactively not have it, skip straight to 2013. I can't really argue with that. I would say that the major event that's been causing us lots of problems is my wife's father passing away, which, I mean, we were both really close to him, and it went, I mean, really as well as can be expected. He was 83, 84, like, and really sort of like was doing fine until almost the very end, but still hung on long enough for everyone to be there. So died, I mean, more or less famously. It wasn't, you know, long, drawn-out terribleness, like I've had some other relatives go through over the years. But that sucked, and that was really... the way it ended up happening from our side was that we knew that he wasn't doing very well. He had been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, which is, especially at his age, like, not really the curable kind. Like, it was sort of, we can either, you know, try and treat this and give you, you know, 6 miserable months, or you can just sort of not be treated and have, you know, 3 or 4 really good months. Or, I mean, like, you know, not having chemo months, at least. And that's, I mean, huge props to the doctors for actually, you know, sort of laying out, like, his actual choices there, because he was not a fan of hospitals. Few of us are, but he more than most. And so he elected to just sort of not really have it treated at all. Just, you know, pain meds, and that was basically it. And so, anyway, he was doing quite well. For, I forget the actual length of time that they gave him. It's all sort of run together now, but he was already, you know, he had trucked along for quite a while, and was doing quite well, and was supposed to meet up with us and some of his sisters to go camping, and he wasn't able to make it. Like, he took a downturn, and it was just completely crashed at that point. Like, we went to visit them instead, because, you know, we were planning to take off, going camping, whatever. And so we got there, and he went from being, like, the week before he had been driving, he was a deacon, so he did the reading at his church, like, everything totally fine. Like, not, I mean, like, he came back from doing the reading and slept for most of the day, but, I mean, you're in your 80s to do that, right? Which, I mean, was a little less active than usual, but nothing, like, nothing really bad. And then, like, we got there, and it was, like, all of 2 or 3 weeks before he was dead, and he spent most of that basically just comatose. But it gave, you know, his kids who wanted to be there for the end a chance to be there, which was very good. But anyway, so we were out there, and sort of like, I'm not really great with family to begin with. It's not really something I do, which sounds strange, possibly, but is just sort of how I interact with it. So we, you know, spend, like, holidays are always kind of a meh thing, because I don't like, especially if, you know, we're all staying in the house, just being crammed in with that many people. With really any people, you know, we don't even really do roommates or anything like that, if we can possibly avoid it. But being in the house with everyone, well, you know, someone is dying, and they're all going through, you know, their own dealing with stuff, and their own grief, and their own trying to, you know, reassert control over their lives, was honestly probably more stressful than him dying, because it was sort of, I mean, he was old, we, you know, knew that was going to happen eventually. And like I said, it went about as well. But so all of that was happening, and my wife and I were both having vastly different but stressful problems at work at the same time. My wife was having, the usual struggles of a small nonprofit. You know, never really know where the next dollar is going to come from, things like that. And I was dealing with the normal struggles of a cog in the machine in a massive multinational corporation. So it was that on top of that, and it was just, we were both just kind of wrecked, between everything. And, so we, after we came back, I was in a pretty bad way, and ended up actually getting, I hesitate to say that I was diagnosed with an anxiety disorder so much as I explained what was going on to my doctor, and she was like, you need pills, like, have some pills, and they're actually working out very well. I'm taking them. Boost Par is the brand name, which is funny because it's one of those things that it's like for half the population does absolutely nothing, and like more like thirds, like third of the population does nothing, third of the population makes it worse, third of the population, it actually works pretty well. Obviously, pulling numbers out of my ass there, but the effects are really, really wildly varied, like you'll see with a lot of drugs of that nature. But I've been taking that, that's been helping a lot. We've been sort of experimenting to find the dosage, and that's been sort of a roller coaster. It's like, I mean, it's really interesting from, you know, a metroplexy perspective, because obviously, you know, we've got the body mechanic there, and if you take, you know, one dose of a drug, typically, it'll do X, and then if you take two doses, it'll do 2X, and so on and so forth. And that's fine. It's just works really well for game terms, but my experiences with this have just been really funny in that it's like 5 milligram dose will like send me into like this spirals of anxiety, and 10 milligram dose will make me like super depressed, like not like suicidal or anything, but like basically incapable of functioning in any sort of useful way. But 7.5 milligrams, by God, I actually feel more or less well, not normal for me, but functional. Still, I mean, more than capable of being stressed out. It's not on the same grade as something like Xanax that'll just sort of knock you out, at least, you know, again, for some people. Other people has vastly different effects, but yeah, so I've been on that, and that's actually been helping a lot. The kickstart in development rate, you haven't entirely seen yet, because I've mostly been working on Halloween stuff, but I've been getting, since I started taking that and have settled at a good dosage, I've been getting more done in a day than I had been getting done in, like, a week or several weeks, depending on how stressed out I was. So that's been really something. So that's good. I'm really happy about that. Of course, to end on a down note, since I posted for this thread originally, one of my younger sister's children died, which is a little, it shook me up a little bit, but should be fine. Obviously she's in much worse shape. 8-year-old just stopped breathing in his sleep, basically. So, no, I'm sorry, not 8-year-old, 8-month-old. Which is, I mean, happens, but sucks. So yeah. Never even got to meet him, which is a little weird. It's like, yeah. So, that's sort of been the arc of my year. With the work fuckery sort of condensed down. There was actually a point where we were in the house with everyone while my father-in-law was, you know, in his last days, where work was still the most stressful thing in my life. And that was sort of a realization. Like, that's, when push comes to shove, like, that's just not acceptable. Like, I actually just basically had to take them aside, and by them I mean my management team, because heaven knows you can't deal with less than 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, six, counting very conservatively, six managers. Yeah, Office Space, totally, not kidding. One of those movies that just almost isn't funny, because it's like, why did they make a documentary about my day at work? But, yeah. So yeah, that was just like, okay, like, you know, you, like, if you're going to just go over this line, you might as well lay me off, because this is, I'm not gonna follow you over this barrier. So, that's, yeah, when, those are the gory details. This has been a pretty shitty year, all told, trying to get back on track in a broader life sense, but also, you know, with Metroplexity and Twilight Heroes. I think I've been doing a pretty good job, obviously. Proof's in the pudding. We'll see where we are, you know, at the end of the year, if things are still rolling. But I think we're pointed in the right direction. How are Halloween plans coming along? Good. Things are... one thing I will say, actually in advance, about Halloween is that because of some of the content that is going in there, the easiest way to explain this is the Halloween for Metroplexity has always been sort of the showpiece of choice in Metroplexity. And it's really the, you know, community choice festival, right? And one of the things that I think is important about actual meaningful lasting choices is that they create ripples down the road. And this Halloween might be more ripples than short-distance choices, which is not, obviously, the way that it's necessarily been in the past, but something that I think needs to happen for those choices to be significant. So, we've got some interesting stuff going on with previous choices, hopefully some interesting new choices. A lot of content hopefully be done. We'll see where that goes. But I think people will enjoy it. And I've got a lot of really good art from Puya. She just keeps getting better and better. Art museum? I wonder why. There might possibly be stuff going on at the art museum. Andrew Quest? That? I think... I just sort of had stopped developing in any meaningful sense for a while. I've talked before a lot on these podcasts about how really the fuel for me working on these things is sort of an emotional energy at some level, right? I don't mean that to sound like, you know, New Age woo, but I mean it's a very, very deeply emotional process, and this is not a workaday thing for me, right? So I've been... There was not a lot of that to go around these past few months, as I'm sure you've noticed, with my lack of stuff happening. But beyond that, I know what Andrea can figure out, and it's really interesting. I would like that to be tied in with the reward, because there's a lot of work that goes into it, too, from the player side. From the PC side, right? Not going to make you sequence any genomes yourself. But I'm still sort of waffling between really beefing it up and having it be having to actually grant a set of skills, right? Or having it remain somewhat slimmer and granting one skill or like a repeatable item. So we'll see where that ends up going. And that's sort of where I'm stuck at with that. Old Town? Hopefully that doesn't sound too overwhelming. The whole question was, how are Ween plans coming around? Art Museum? Andrew Request? Old Town? glad I took my anxiety medicine. But the Old Town is... This actually didn't... I'm thinking about all the gory details with the anxiety and depression now. I don't mean that to say, like, your question depressed me, but the... It sort of hooks back in, because I was obviously working on the Old Town stuff when everything went to shit. I was working on Dr. Amundsen's branch of the Old Town quest, and realized that it's going to be, I mean, very heavily hooked into the hacking system, obviously. And the hacking system has never quite done what I wanted it to. I think there were some very fundamental mistakes I made in the design of the hacking system. And really what I need to do is go back and scrap it and start over, effectively. Which is a substantive time commitment, obviously. I mean, we can, you know, sort of reuse some of the goals and the text and even probably some of the code, but there's a lot to go in there. But the problem is that only becomes more of a time commitment as I start to add things like Dr. Amundsen's quest there. So the Old Town stuff is probably on hold until after I redo hacking, and then I'll go in and get that, which sucks, because I really wanted to get Old Town out this year, but I don't think I would be happy with it if I got it out this year, unless I become a complete fucking design machine, which, I mean, I have been for the last couple of weeks, but... I know better than to say, like, oh, I've been doing really well the last couple of weeks. If we assume that that continues indefinitely, I'll have, you know, Old Town out in January. Because that's just not how that actually ends up working at all. Because, you know, there are other times where it's been like, oh, I've gotten nothing done for the past couple of weeks. If I keep this out, I'll have Old Town out around the time of the heat death of the universe. So... sometime between there. So, yeah. So, yeah. That sucks, but what can you do? So, I do think Old Town's going to be really cool, but that I... hopefully goes without saying. It is still something that I'm excited about doing. I just, it's sort of unfortunate having to loop back and do these little things. Will we have the option to bring back the Emerald Gift again this year? What about more dinosaurs? I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Now that Winged Hunter has been found, can we get some Tome of Binding Techniques for Chain 7 and 8, and then a Tome Master Avatar for using all 5 Binding Techniques in Chain? That is not the worst idea I've ever heard. The Tome of Binding is one of those things that I'm sure that you can all tell that there are some things in the game that I just like and enjoy finding terrible and strange ways to use. And the Tome of Binding is definitely one of those. So finding more pieces of... more things to do with the Tome of Binding is not unsurprising. Nest Keepers, limited at 50 energy, and then the spiders just start eating each other. Hinting at something more, just a cool excuse for another spider message. Spiders are very cool. Spiders are very cool. I have a totally sweet encounter planned for Pathfinder GMing. I've gotten back to GMing, which is really nice. It's probably like my favorite leisure activity other than, you know, coding games. Which is kind of funny, because it's like playing games. What's this playing games thing? Although I guess we did have a rousing game of Cards Against Humanity last night. That was fun. But I almost want to say there's something terrible in there. It has been a while, though. I think I remember where. Oh, man. I'm such a vile, vile individual. Okay. I mean, there's a little bit going on there, but I don't think, you're not at the precipice of a vast chasm of undiscovered content. Is there a technique that could be used to work out opponent's strength stats? I think you said in the past there was one planned. Is it available to us now? If not, can we get it soon? I believe there's one in the game that does that. If not, I'm sure that one will come up eventually. I would not worry about that too much. Related, will we see a bonus at long distance soon? There are a bunch of chain numbers on this thing, but they're all too high. Ow. This is why we love you. I would be surprised if that didn't come up. As a general rule, I feel like, ranged just needs love sometimes, you know? So much of the etheric heavy content has, you know, a real serious melee bent. And the bigger mundane content is, largely in places like Old Town and Downtown and so forth. So that's sort of me taking forever, skewing the balance a bit. But that does mean that, you know, unearthly items on the ranged side, I might be able to push things a little bit. But I think a long-distance technique, be it etheric or ranged or stealth, a bonus at long distance doesn't fit the theme of ranged attacks super well, but we'll worry about that when we come to it. Smooth Nova seems suspiciously poor compared to other drugs. Cut Nova, for example. Are we missing something there? Body cost is surprisingly high. I don't think there's anything super interesting going on there, though. I'd have to dig into it, but you might want to remind me at some point to buff that, because I think that's probably actually what that needs. Do we know who gave the order to kidnap David and Dr. Emson? Hawk says that they're the only one that can supply Eclipse, which probably means Midgard somehow, but then Dr. Thomas can take over, she's also Midgard, perhaps another vision. How much conflict is there in Midgard? How soon till we find out more details on the kidnapping? Probably a while before you find out more details on the kidnapping. As far as how much conflict there is in Midgard, the answer is as much as at any giant corporation. Which, for anyone who doesn't work at a giant corporation, means sort of like dysfunctional family level fighting and backstabbing. Yeah, a lot. I mean, both, you know, within departments for, you know, promotions and praise and budget and not getting fired. And when we're talking about just some of the departments that we're talking about here, the being fired might be a little unpleasantly literal. You may end up floating in the lake. Or, you know, processed down for parts. But also, like, in a broader sense, it's not even so much that it's with Midgard as an example in organizations of that size in general. It's not even so much that the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. It's the left hand may know that the right hand exists, and so there's a lot of stuff going on in Midgard that. Even people within Midgard won't necessarily have the faintest idea what's going on. And even in a lot of cases, people high on the chain. I mean, there's a lot to be said for, you know, I only care about results. And that's the sort of thing you'd probably hear a lot in Midgard boardrooms. Sort of their modus operandi. And that's good, you know, whatever, as far as it goes. But that, in practice, ends up meaning that a lot of the divisions more or less have carte blanche to do whatever they want. And beyond just that sort of cutthroat approach to, I mean, I think hearing that, you know, the first assumption is like, oh, you know, they feel like they can, you know, kidnap people and perform experiments on them, which obviously is true, or, you know, pick them up and heal them, or however you, whatever they think they're doing, somebody probably knows what's actually going on. But also, I mean, that's also directed, internally, right? If, you know, there are two departments that are in competition for funds, and their whole, whether they get funds, and whether, you know, their managers get promoted, et cetera, is results-based. And they have this sort of carte blanche, which they very much do in this case. I mean, the normal level of just, like, corporate backstabbing, you know, sniping people from other teams, poisoning the well, as it were, becomes a little more literal. You know, if another team has, you know, a really good scientist and they're making, you know, all sorts of, you know, getting all sorts of new patents and stuff for the company, and your team is working on, you know, under the same division even, is doing fine work, but doesn't have that sort of, you know, genius underneath it, it might be worth, you know, I mean, obviously trying to recruit them over to your team at a higher salary, et cetera, et cetera. Or, really, at the end of the day, like, it is in your best interest to have that guy shot, if you're the manager of the other team. At Midgard, I mean, it's obviously not something that you want your manager to find out about that you had, you know, the rising star of the company assassinated. But you're talking about some pretty seriously cutthroat people in different parts of the company. And that sort of shit, like, will go down at Midgard. It's just not the sort of thing that gets publicized, for obvious reasons. The festive Nidhad is rumored to be able to sprout tentacles and interact with Channel Deep. Is the truth behind these rumors, or is Arya just messing with us? Oh, man. Can I retroactively make that true? Because that's kind of awesome. temptation aside, Argath is trolling you, but That would be kind of epic. I know this is probably still a long ways off, but want to give us any vague hints at how pets will work? Yeah. Pets are... This is an intent thing, right? So this may be completely different. But the intent has been more or less the same since I, you know, originally put the game together. So I, you know, I might figure out that I'm an idiot, like, halfway through implementing it. Or, you know, years after implementing it. But, basically how it'll end up working is, pets, typically, aren't like the follow you around, fight beside you, though obviously, you know, exceptions, but, typically are not. They're typically, more along the lines of really adorable furniture, that you can interact with in various ways. And the end result, will probably be, I mean, you're talking, buffs or straight, in-house enhancements, like you saw with the, melting brick person, that just, like, has a, you know, direct enhancement while it's installed in your house, so, you know, I think anyone who has a adorable little puppy, will agree that's probably worth a morale bonus, as long as, you know, you don't have, like, the sad, neglected puppy, right? So... That's more or less the direction it's going with that, along with, you know, buffs and so forth. So sort of a, what I can't tell you for sure is how deep on the virtual pet side of things that goes, because I do have a real severe weakness for sort of the Tamagotchi Neopets sort of vein of design. And I don't think, you know, like, as standalone games they're necessarily awesome, but I think encapsulated within a larger game like this could be an interesting minigame. So we'll see how minigamey they end up. And, like, you know, who doesn't want to catch fish, bring them home, feed them to your cat? I mean, really, because that's awesome. And I have so much pet art, I feel kind of terrible. But that will probably... I mean, it's one of those things that's obviously on, like, long-term radar, back-burnery type area. I would imagine it will either come out before or after... before or after housing, being able to move into different places. Just on the sheer sorry, I'm losing words here. Either before or after housing, just because either we'll put those in and people will need housing to put all of their pets, or we'll put housing in and then it'll be, oh, people have all of these spots, now we should fill them with adorable pets. I mean, I think one of those, they're probably pretty closely linked. I promise I was not reading ahead. If when we move into bigger apartments in Old Town, will we be able to build a gang hideout on the south side, or will we be able to keep our old apartment there, too? I haven't actually considered... the way that it's coded right now would not support keeping your old apartment, but that is reasonable. What I would expect to happen, if I don't get a ton of, you know, screaming at... is that your primary place of residence will overwrite the gang hideout in that area. And what's happening right now is just, I'm not going to let you build a gang hideout on the south side because everyone lives in the south side. So if you got far enough on and the quest lines start moving somewhere else, that would unlock, effectively, getting hideout on the south side. So, yes, I would not be surprised to see that. If it's one of those things that, like, it's like, maybe like 20% chance or something, that people will be so whiny about wanting to immediately use the gang hideout or, like, have an apartment in a place and use the gang hideout instead, that I'll just say, fuck it, and either not do player housing at all, or, generally, like, do something else terrible to people. Assuming that doesn't happen, yes, that's about the plan. Thanks, Connect. You are welcome, Al. Some questions from Vols. Why a toad? Is it a +2 fortitude bonus? Yeah, dude, toads are broken. I mean, that's pretty fucking handy, especially for a lowly wizard. I'm tempted to say something like, it came to me in a dream. You know, actually, I do know. It's a very roundabout reference, is what's going on there. By reference, I mean how my brain works. So if you go deep on... God, I think that's... I don't think that's Clark Ashton Smith. It's gotta be... It's either Clark Ashton Smith or Arthur Machen. Who I eventually realized was actually real. Funny story, actually, about Arthur Machen is that... Yeah, Clark Ashton Smith, the reference. So funny story about Machen. When I was reading, 15, 16, I read the Illuminatus Trilogy of 15, 16. Loved it. Which explains a lot, I think. Not about, the game or anything, just about, my, insanity. Read it, loved it, and then, a year or two later, I remembered that, there had been all of these references in it. I mean, they talk about, the Necronomicon, the Principia Discordia, and all these books, right? And so I read it again and just made note of all of the books. Real, fake, or, has been made since it was released. At the time that I read it, there was not... I could have double-checked everything on, AltaVista or whatever, which is my failing, but I ended up with Arthur Machen in the wrong column, so I thought that he was not a writer of, sort of pre-Lovecraft cosmic horror-type-ish stuff. I'm not actually a huge Machen fan now that I've read him, but whatever. But I thought that he was a fictional author in Lovecraft stuff. It's way funnier. I ended up finally tracking down some Machen and reading it. I was not terribly impressed. For one of the favorite authors of one of my favorite authors, there apparently isn't a transitive property there. Admittedly, there's a lot of ways in which Lovecraft is not actually a good writer, so, that probably has more to do with his judgment on good writers being suspect, if that makes sense. His proficiency with the English language, although his vocabulary is prodigious, his actual, technical skill is sort of, and I think what was happening there is that he thought Machen had good ideas, which he did, but his execution was left a lot, at least to me, to be desired. Whereas, like, Lovecraft just doesn't believe in execution, really. It just sort of ended up working out. Mocking also didn't work out. At least worked out less well for me. Anyway. Can I get a helicopter and turn it into a private helicopter? They're very small. So if you cut off your own head and, like, wired it in there, yes. Just so you know. Why are so many people organized with questions in advance? Just wing it. My understanding is that there are at least several people who use the note section in-game to keep track of questions as they run into them. Which is a little unfortunate, because sometimes it ends up with me getting really specific questions about things that I don't remember at all. The path skills from this ghost ship aren't obviously bad, which would cause us to investigate further, but they do seem less deep than the other skills. Is there anything hidden here? I seem to recall that there's a cool interaction related to those. And I think they're strategically interesting and will be more strategically interesting as, like, when skill permit goes in and things like that. Is there significance with how you choose to deal with the Ghost Navigator? I mean, depends whether you're a jerk or not. I don't... I don't think that there is a deep significance to that, no. Like, as far as I don't think it has a lot of in-game effects at this point. I spent my morning eating green pancakes and dinosaur shapes listening to music from Warcraft 2 and Baldur's Gate. Why was your morning not this awesome? I don't know! Oh my god. That is phenomenal. Although, in my defense, yesterday morning, I went downstairs and was like, I'm an idiot. I forgot to mention that we were running out of oatmeal. And now, I have like half a scoop of oatmeal and would make like the most pathetic bowl of oatmeal ever. And my wife, being the most awesome wife, most awesome spouse, would be the better way to put this when I finish the story. Be the most awesome spouse because she was like, oh, we'll make pancakes. And I was like, really? Like that? It's just like a giant pain in the ass. It's like, no, I will totally make pancakes. So she made pancakes for me. And I had really good maple syrup for it. Because I have discovered the secret ways of maple syrup, which is most products, when you're looking at them, it's like, you know, grade A is the best, grade B is the second best, etc., right? Like in any rational world. Like you don't go out looking for grade B meat, right? There are things to be said for letting your meat age a bit, but you're not, yeah, looking out for, you know, you're looking for grade A, not grade B. Maple syrup totally doesn't work that way. It's just like how not maple-y it is. Like, I have not tried grade C maple syrup. I'm not sure if that's even a legitimate classification. But it's like grade B maple syrup tastes amazingly like maple. It is awesome. Grade A maple syrup, I mean, it's fine. Like, it's maple syrup. But is sugarier and less maple-y. Which is not what I, which is usually my problem with maple syrup. It tastes too much like sugar water, like even good maple syrup. I mean, as opposed to, you know, the stuff you buy in the store, which is just sugar water. So anyway, I had pancakes made with a lot of love. Good maple syrup. And that was nice. And this morning we went to North Market, which if anyone is here in Columbus, go to North Market. For the rest of you, it's a huge, it's a, basically a warehouse, that they, got converted into like a open air shopping center. Not shopping center is not a good way to put that. Open air, like, farmer's market food court type thing. So it's like 24 shops, I think, but they've got like, really good local free-range meat, and, like, a really good greengrocer, a great cheese shop, and all these restaurants. Actually, one of them is getting actually pretty famous now, which is Jenny's. Started out there. If you've been hearing about crazy ice cream from Columbus, that's them. And we've been going there constantly since we moved here, which is a bit of a problem as far as waistline goes, but that's where they started. We went down there and picked up our vegetables for the week and some local milk and crazy local Amishy butter. And had pho for breakfast. Apparently that's what you do. Which is really fun, because it's... There's an amazing bakery. Like best friggin' cinnamon rolls. I guess best cinnamon rolls that I've ever had that don't involve one of my friends staying up all night the night before making them, because I have a friend who will literally do that. They're the best cinnamon rolls on the fucking planet, but barring those, best cinnamon rolls ever. Really good Indian place, really good Italian place, really good pizza place that I skipped, because I don't really do pizza, but it's quite good if you're a pizza sort. And then, pretty good pho place just happened to be what I was thinking about, Jenny's, and then a place that just does Belgian waffles, and that's it. And they are amazing. It's like top-notch, ridiculous Italian place for super cheap, rapidly becoming nationally famous ice cream place, and a place that just does Belgian waffles. The Belgian waffle place is totally worth it. Oh, but anyway, we ended up having pho for breakfast instead of Belgian waffles because I don't believe in breakfast food. By which I mean, I feel like if I have a taste for lunch food and it's breakfast time, I should have lunch food. And if I'm like, I want a Belgian waffle for lunch, I should have that too. But anyway. So that was my morning. But, my pancakes were neither green nor dinosaur shaped, so I can't compete. Some questions from Magnifico. I'm curious about the backstory of the Crystal Spine. Will we find out more in-game about its makers? What gave you the idea for such a bizarre item? Were you originally thinking of having it be a weapon? I guess I could have had it be a weapon. The forms of it just ended up being very weapony to make it obvious what each did. So it was more of a form follows function on that side. So they just ended up being very weapon seeming. What gave you the idea for such a bizarre item? That's a really good question. I don't think I can blame this one. I'm reading a lot of Clark Ashton Smith. Something about... the crystalline sort of changing item, feels perfectly normal to me. That may not be. But as far as, the fact that it's a spine, is related, I feel like the, sort of plain spine, the rod, and the loop, are what I was thinking of originally, and sort of expanded it out from there, to have it do everything that I wanted it to. But yeah, it's very almost visceral. That's probably not a good thing to say. It's like, I was thinking about how convenient it would be to have a straightened out spine that I could beat someone to death with. Thing to not tell your friends. But yeah. I'm gonna have to go with, visceral appreciation for how the spine is modular and can be put into different arrangements. You mentioned you might be doing a hacking revamp after Halloween. What are you thinking of changing? How extensively will you have to recode to make that happen? All of it, basically. Well, that's not entirely fair. Okay. So, the way that hacking works now is sort of like, I mean, it's always a choice encounter, and one option under the choice encounter is a combat. I mean, typically, right? Like, if you are at the, if you're not at the top access level. There are two major, so the way that programs work, assuming that I go through with this and don't, like, manage to talk myself out of it somehow, which would be kind of nice if I could, but I'm pretty sure I can't. The way that programs work will be totally revamped, which is going to be interesting, because I'm going to... it's going to be neat, because I'll basically end up tacking new functionality onto the existing programs, and then running through with those, and then just flipping the functionality switch, as it were, so that all of the encounters are running through the new stuff rather than the old stuff. So that'll be kind of neat. we'll see how that goes. But the way that targets are tracked is going to have to change, sort of unrelated to the rest of the changes. But there's just so much. They really need to expire pretty quickly. In this, like, probably like 4 days, right? Just so that... Because the way that they work now is just sort of warping people's playstyle in a way that is irritating to them and irritating to me and makes them irritate me with requests to make their playstyle less irritating when it's not what was intended. Which, not blaming anyone for that. That's me fucking up. Like, that is me not... This is going to make it sound like I'm shifting blame back on people. This is not it. But an important part of designing games is understanding that there is a pretty substantial part of the player populace that will do whatever is optimal regardless of how fun it is, right? So you want to be very careful to understand what is optimal going in, and do your best to make sure that that's, like, within the range of fun. Like, you don't want to put the trade-off in there between fun and winning, right? Like, it ends in tears. And obviously, I mean, that's one of the sort of, like, lofty, top-level things where it doesn't always work out that way. And what basically happened was people had been, for a long time, really... using it not in the way that was intended originally, right? Like, just keeping massive lists and sorting through them and keeping sort of, like, permanent hacks going, and it just does not... It's not really a problem from, like, the server side of things. It's not like, you know, you're crashing the server or anything. It's just actually really annoying to keep track of, and there is only so much that I can do about that. So it's basically either just leave that to suck forever, or redesign it so that basically so that people can't hurt themselves with it, which sounds awful, but sorry, I guess. Sort of, yeah, just making sure that it's handled gracefully within the confines of the man. I'm not explaining this very well. You probably get where I'm going. It basically just needs to be designed such that you can't... It doesn't make sense in-world to accumulate all these sites and leave them forever. That's not how that actually usually works, especially when you're talking about things that, you know, automatic updates, and, like, a lot of times you'll only have, like, you know, 0 to 3 days to crack in there anyway. Not that I know anything about that. But also because it really ends up being a pain in the ass in-game, and if... if it's not optimal, well, if it's not allowed, you don't have to do it, if that makes sense. That's probably as close as I'll be able to get to explaining that. If people want to try and get me to explain that another time, I will give it another shot. But that's the sort of executive summary. Anyway, so that is going to change. That's not going to be a huge deal, probably, but... And the biggest change is that the hacking will be integrated into, instead of choice with a chunk underneath for, with the combat underneath, it will be integrated into one sort of, I mean, one hacking encounter, which will work more like combat. So, sort of, on a very, very high level, you'll start out with a pool of resources to allocate that are based on your programs. I'm not going to get into how that works right now, but you'll get the pool of resources that won't be, you know, obviously, like, set in stone every time, because it's boring, but, and then you'll more or less go through and, allocate them, and that will be, like, your one energy worth of hacking, so instead of, you know, fighting and it being one energy, and grabbing some files and it being one energy, and grabbing some more files and it being one energy. If you are, good at it in the sense that, you know, you have good programs, you have the appropriate skills and whatnot, and all that plays in together, and you're good at the, sort of minigame aspect of it, you will be able to potentially do all of those in one energy. Or, you know, fight through multiple layers of defenses, or grab multiple files, reroute multiple shipments, whatever you're working on there. Not, right? And that'll all play into how the defenses work, and, you know, the security levels and all of these things. So we're talking about a pretty substantial revamp, and from more or less the ground up, about the only thing that I don't foresee changing are the programs themselves, particularly the craftable ones, because that would end up being a giant pain. And I don't think that they need to change in the sense that the recipes don't work or anything like that. Like, I think that whole structure is okay. But what they do will end up changing. So that doesn't, a lot of those things don't, like the hacking tools as they exist now won't really mean anything, to the new system. So they'll end up, in function, working completely differently. So yeah, we're talking a pretty serious, down and dirty revamp. And hopefully all of that made sense. So, yeah. Top level, management of the lists is gonna be streamlined so that you don't have huge lists, so that you don't have to have huge lists. How the tools work will be totally different, and how the hacking encounters themselves are structured will be totally different. Are the messages you get around from toting a preserved cell culture that hinted the XP skewing property of writhing flesh, or is there more to it? If so, is this something you would follow up on now, or the hook for eventual pet content or something? That is not a hook for pet content. There are quite a few messages with the preserved cell culture, I believe, does something on its own in addition to writhing flesh. So I think it's hinting at that. As I recall, it is quite subtle, though. With the Jade Amulet Winged Hunter, the massive branch of unfound content you mentioned lurking in Stolen Artistry, use that content you still had in mind lurking out there. No, that is the big branch that nobody had found. Because there's a lot buried under there. I tried salvaging a Midgard MK-11A to see if I could get the green fluid out of it, but no avail. Am I just not trying it hard enough, or is it not possible yet? I have thought a couple of times about adding something cool in there. Because it seemed appropriate, and it would be a sort of a neat thing to, as sort of like a non-explicit mini-quest, right? It is not, at the moment, salvageable out of it, though. at some point in my long life, I'm sure that I'll figure out what I want it to do, and then I will. I want it to be more than just, a collectible, right? And putting a whole bunch of, craftable results off of it is both inappropriate in regards to what the fluid is, but also, not a great, would also be, just a lot of work for, a very small thing. But I might end up doing something else with it at some point. One question from Arcane. So, Serpent Venom. I've got that it gives bonuses to either Will or Reflexes if you use Will or Reflexes technique. 2 bonus XP if you have Venomous Angel equipped, but I'm stuck at that. I've tried fighting every mob I could in every location with no luck. I've used all the equipment I have in my hat, shirt, pants, and gadget slots looking for another action. No luck, so... Is this enough to warrant a hint? Wow. I mean, the XP thing is the main thing that's hidden there, as I recall. I would not be surprised if there were some interactions with other serpent-related stuff, because that makes sense. I will assume that you've tried all of those already. Don't mind me just looking to see if there's anything else. Yeah, if there is anything else, it would be hidden with techniques. So it's not nothing else hard-coded, which doesn't really help you narrow it down. But I would, if there's anything else hidden there, which I will not absolutely promise, it'll be hidden with techniques. Aranoth, I've been building a blog for a while, so I apologize in advance for the disorganized list. I think I mentioned before that some people were using the notes section. I'm not sure if that's you, but I will call that foresight. Can you put someone leaving an area in the gang log? Seems reasonable. Let me think here real quick. There's only a couple of places where that happens. So it shouldn't be a giant pain. When MuffledSight was released, there were various musings that the many ways individuals can see the ether, I believe GoalSight was mentioned. Do any opponents have sight skills, possibly ones we don't have? Oh, okay. For example, the fish people could have ocean sight themselves, mushroom people could have their own sight that we know nothing of. Further, do you have plans for adding more sight skills or sources like the pills, or are there any we simply haven't discovered? Let's see. I mean, there's... Yeah, there's at least one that's not achievable, and there are several more that you will see as you go through the game. There's a lot going on as far as how people interact with the ether. Like, there is a lot of material on that. Not saying that it's all in the game yet. You can see some... hints of it, because it's something that Midgard is obviously very interested in, but that's something that, yeah, that I would expect to see a lot more of, particularly as you start plumbing the depths of what Midgard is up to. With all the effort of our smuggler, the Eurasian dockwork, and so on, to go through trade illegal goods, why does the Omnimall just let someone ship pretty much anything? Because that would be a giant pain. I mean, the Omnimall is really, really, really just an excuse to have, you know, player mall there, so that, among other things, I don't have to include any other trade mechanics, because those are fucking disaster. That's not me being angry at you, I just hate other trade mechanics. Rather, I hate having multiple trade mechanics in the same game, because they don't get any easier to maintain, they just get used less as you include more of them. So you're just punching yourself in the genitals for no reason. But, that completely aside, I mean, there's... It's sort of for the same reason that when you get, you know, beaten up by Midgard security, they don't steal all of your illegal shit that you're carrying. There is assuredly a game for that. At some point, you really just have to be okay with it, though. Much the same reason that we don't... have size maxes or weight maxes or however you want to deal with it for inventory. It's one of those things that becomes the game if you let it. Admittedly, like, because of, if we still had Omnimal as the only method of trading and did not allow illegal stuff to go through Omnimal, that would be a hilarious way to deal with no trade items. but, I mean, I could see that happening. It's one of those things where it's a trade-off between, like, realism and a vibrant player economy. Or, you know, having to go through and do, like, a second, like, black market Omnimal substitute, whatever. Yeah. Hopefully that makes sense. Would it be possible to not have an agenda for gang warfare? I mean, in a theoretical sense, yes. I don't know really why you'd want to. It feels like the sort of thing that I would just add and then get asked in the next podcast, why is there a just-because-you're-a-dick agenda for gang warfare? I mean, in-world, the no-agenda agenda is basically control, right? You're just establishing control for the sake of establishing control, and maybe at the end you will switch over to, you know, something else. And I think that's probably as close as you're going to get to not having an agenda. Is it possible to get into the Mushroom Cavern without ocean or face sight? I don't think so. I haven't looked at that code in a while, so don't take my word at it, but I believe that's how it's structured. For David's quest, are the fish and fae people the only sources of skill rewards, including the orb from the Fish King? I feel like the mushroom people should have something to offer if you do a lot to help them, but so far that hasn't worked. Mushroom people do actually have some cool stuff that you can get, but they're not of the skill giving. No, I don't believe that they have a skill under there. I could probably add one, but at present there's not. Giving low unknown samples for his investigation still resulted in results that I was conclusive that he was like, and the option to show him more remains. Could there be some unknown useful samples and a reward for getting them all? Animal specialist a la sushi theft or something? I would have to double check, you know, the list of known samples against the list of actual available ones in the code. There are a lot of samples you can give him, and I don't plan to be shy about adding more. I tried to make it as modular as I could so that I could snap in another one and have it not be a big deal. At the end of the day, I mean, Lo is a scientist, and the results that he's getting don't make a ton of sense. Even when you get a lot of data points, it's still sort of gibberish. So he will cheerfully take as many samples as you can give him. Once there is a suitably absurd number of samples, having a reward for a suitably absurd number would be good. But it wouldn't be, I wouldn't set it up as all of them. It would be something like, you can give him 20, and if you give him 15 or 16, probably, you get a cool side thing. So what are the odds of conduct for killing or letting die every unique NPC who can die? Though allowing David to die prevents killing some of the other unique etheric individuals could be an issue. In the distant future, that would be something sort of like that, but it would be after basically everyone is killable. I mean, at the moment, there are certain people who can't die just because there aren't enough paths through the main content. Once all of that is in, which is a long time, there will probably be something like, you're a murderous fucking psychopath, conduct. Why is it that concentrated Spider-Man, before you inject it into an opponent, makes it less harmful and prevents it from actually giving the opponent any energy of Spider-Venom? Or are we just missing some necessary trigger? Also, why don't the spiders you summon poison enemies even though you can collect poison afterwards? Actually, the answer to all of that is because that code didn't exist when I implemented those. For a long time, you could not give buffs or debuffs to enemies, and that shows up in a couple of weird places. That actually does work now. I did code in a system to do that, not terribly long ago. So I could go back through and make those venoms actually work. And like some of the other injection techniques, which, I mean, isn't really high on my to-do list, but it's worth thinking about. I apologize if this has been asked before, but why if fire power is so much more limited than the other powers? For example, the highest weapon bonus is +4. I assume this is some sort of balancing issue based on defense, encounters, and NPC opponents, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. It's... each of the technique types sort of has its own flavor. And that comes across in how you go about interacting with it and its power. I mean, it's sort of like melee techniques tend to have more to do with what your opponent is doing than ranged techniques do. Ranged techniques tend to have a lot to do with their position in your chain. And etheric techniques, you know, you can get etheric power from basically anything, but they have some sort of special requirement, like, you know, feeding off clips or having the tome of binding or whatever. Stealth, you get less from... you can a lot of different slots have stealth, you get less from the etheric power, but they tend to avoid evasion. And fire... tends to play out more based on what you're using it against. Some things are very vulnerable to fire attacks, some things are not particularly vulnerable. The ones that aren't particularly vulnerable, I mean, fire techniques do tend to have decent power, but they will not be as awesome. So, it's sort of like with the melee technique that is good against, for example, ranged attacks. If you're fighting an opponent with a lot of ranged attacks, it's a good choice. Similarly, with fire techniques, it tends to be a good choice with the... it tends to be a chink in a lot of enemies' armors. And, I mean, others, you know, totally invulnerable, whatever. Like, it's very, very dependent on who you're using it against. It's just sort of fire's thing. Do you ever discover bugs because we're not getting or finding something that you think would be easy? After all, it would be very difficult for us to know that there's such a bug in the first place. I do tend to check back over things if, it's not being found, or if people are, like, trying something, and it's sounds about right, but it's not quite working. Most of the time, it ends up being okay. It ends up not being a bug. But, I mean, there have been occasions where I've found bugs that way. Ironically, it's almost never... stuff that was supposed to be mysterious and all. Like, I'll end up going back through and be like, oh, this was supposed to give some, you know, context-sensitive text so that, like, if you met this person before, it acknowledges it or something. It just doesn't happen. Do you know what's in the unoptimal locked warehouse? Are there plans for it? Or are its contents just as mysterious to you? If I know, I'm not coming up with it right now. Because of the nature of how the arc for the maps works, every area that we've done so far, with the exception of Southside. Well, I mean, actually, even with Southside. It's just we filled that one in. I've had Puyo include some, you know, extra places to put stuff for later. Why is In the Jungle unsellable on the Omnimall and like all the other specialty wares from your Asian in the VIP rule? Because it's the one that grants the skill, basically. That might be dumb, but that's the reason for it, so. Thanks for putting up with the question, Doug. I look forward to your vague musings. Enjoy the vagueness. Alright, couple questions from Vama. I've been chipping away at Plus Surface Fishing for a while, among other things, so that's the time around I'll stick to fishing. Firstly, it looks to me that Plus Surface and Plus Deep Fishing use a similar mechanic. It will be a good while before I get Plus Object, Plus Actual Fish, but I'm curious whether they would be similar to Deep and Surface. Mechanically, they're related, yes. Next, using Plus Surface as a basis, it looks like Plus Surface modifier is large impact, and the Plus Fishing modifier is low impact. I'm wondering if I'm on the right track with this reasoning or coming at it the wrong way. Additionally, I keep running into around 25% as a cap of sorts and wondering if there's an actual cap or if I'm hitting a bottleneck of sorts that looks like a cap. The chance of X, the ones where I use, you know, adjectives, I guess that would be, rather than raw numbers, it's because the way that it's calculated ends up naturally providing diminishing returns. So there's a very good chance you're hitting some sort of diminishing returns in there. So I would be surprised if you were hitting 25% and it stuck at 25%, but if you hit 25% and then had to do a lot more work to get it up to, you know, 50, that would be, if it was, you know, if it took one unit of effort to get to 25 and four units of effort to get to 50, or whatever. I mean, that's not what the actual equation would work out as, but that's sort of diminishing returns. Recently, I took a look at if the actual fishing rank had an effect of Plus Surface, and I observed no notable difference between rank 4 and rank 8. I'm curious if this is intended behavior. This is an intended behavior, and rank does something else that is nifty but unknown. Would you be willing to give a hint? In the event that actual rank doesn't do something else, though, would you be willing to make it so ranks over 4 counts as a bonus to Plus Fishing modifier? Something like Plus 1 at rank 5, Plus 4 at rank 8, as an example. Rank is what fishing modifier adds to, so yes, congratulations, it has been added, retroactively. So yeah, the fishing modifier, it increases your effective rank. For all of the purposes that you wanted to increase your effective rank for, how about that? There's some places where that would actually be bad, so. I'm sure you can figure those out. Is there anything else out there that has an impact on various types of fishing? Is a skill effect on equipment or a secret? If it is a secret, will you be willing to give a vague hint? I mean, there are... The fishing system is, as you've noticed, very, very complicated. There are some pretty tricky things in there that unlock... Coin fishing is a good example on how coin fishing interacts with this. That's actually a really mean example because of the nature of coin fishing, but how that interacts with the various modifiers would be an interesting example. Or how high test fishing interacts with the modifiers, or how certain baits might give you access to different fish options, things like that. I also have a question about high test. Presumably, plus deep makes it trigger more often, plus surface prevents it from triggering, plus object looks to adjust priority in some cases, like making it possible to hook like bottom rocks, while etheric on the shoreline. So, usually, two plus actual fish, which I have yet to observe different behavior. You'd be willing to confirm that it has interaction with high test? Along the same lines, are there any other interesting lime and lure combinations that have gone unnoticed? To the best of my knowledge, nobody's noticed much of anything of interest with the lures, but I haven't been noticing any. I haven't been watching too closely. There is some cool lure stuff out there. The plus actual fish. That's certainly something that is on the table. I'm not sure if I've actually used that with high test yet. Nothing is immediately jumping to mind. I would not be shocked at some point to find yourself more likely to get eaten by a giant sea serpent if you have good bait on your hook. That makes sense. I think... okay, so it doesn't actually make any sense, because I'm talking like a crazy person. But in crazy person land, that makes sense, right? I don't know if there's any place where I've ended up using that yet, though. So, lastly, are there any other items missing from the known fishing spots without triggers, or the eels a self-contained oddity? I don't know if there are any, like, explicitly missing items. There are some that you can screw around with pretty interestingly, with different triggers. But I don't know about, I don't think there are any in the known spots that you're flat out missing. As always, keep the good work and thank you for your time. You're welcome. Bonus question. Which do you think is cooler, the vampire squid or the pistol shrimp? Why? Ooh, I'm going to have to go with pistol shrimp. I mean, vampire squid, pretty cool. Although it had sort of unfortunate anti-Semitic implications, as they're calling me. Double check before I call vampire squids Nazis here. Vampire squid from hell. Yeah, there we go. Vampire squid, anti-Semitic. Do-do-do-do-do. Oh, yeah. Oh, and... Okay. There was discussion of vampire squid metaphor being anti-Semitic. Well, I will trust the New York Times on that one. But anyway, pistol shrimp win anyway, because they are... Okay, this is me being a giant dork. I mean, the obvious reasons, right? The fact they can click and create cavitation bubbles and stun things with shockwaves is just fucking sweet as hell. The other chunk there is that they are, if one were to imagine for a moment, giant pistol shrimp, with, you know, honorable mention, giant mantis shrimp. They would be one of the only 3rd edition D&D monsters that legitimately deal sonic damage. That would just make my fucking day. Because I'm not sure how many 3rd edition / Pathfinder players I have. This is really more of a 3rd edition problem than a Pathfinder problem. But if you go through 3rd edition Monster Manual, it's like, oh, all of these classic D&D monsters. I mean, all of these, like, cool monsters. All of these classic D&D monsters that, you know, like, are dork dorky, but, you know, we grew up with them, so whatever. And then, like, these new terrible dorky monsters, they're just there because they need to have something to deal sonic damage, because it's an official damage type now. And don't get me wrong, I love Monty to death, but, and the Yurthak and the Destrakan, which do show back up in Pathfinder, but they're in, like, Bestiaries 2 and 3, and they feel more at home with, like, the increased wackiness, right? But anyway. So, actually having monsters that legitimately do sonic damage would just make me feel so much better. And that I think it's, I forget if it's Mandastrim or Pistastrim, but one of them can actually, like, crack the sides of aquariums, like, serious, like, you know, the big saltwater aquariums, and just, like, punch right fucking through it, which is sweet as hell. Not that, you know, you want crazy. It has to be the Mandastrim, also known as Peacock Shrimp, because they're actually very pretty. And as another point in their favors, I guess I think the Mandastrim might get more than an honorable mention, but they also can see light polarized in ways that we didn't know that you could polarize light, which is kind of one of my favorite things ever. It's like, we were testing these things and found out that, like, there's a kind of spinning polarization that they can identify that we just never thought to look for because we're, you know, little meat-brained, surface, not underwater-dwelling humans. Okay. Shrimp aside. That's looks like that's it for this podcast. We do have Halloween coming up, which should hopefully be pretty exciting. There may or may not be some stuff, some lead-up showing up even as early as tonight. There's obviously been some hinting. So you'll get to make a lot of choices and see a lot of ripples from choices that have been made in the past. And holy shit, dark. I was sort of mapping out what could happen in the event. That's like that. Man. Like that right there. As the man who has repeatedly made sure that the, you know, cannibalism coding in his game is, you know, up to snuff, reacts appropriately to, you know, the various enemy species that are available to devour, I was like, wow, that's pretty dark. So we'll see what comes to pass there, but okay, so, there is that, and I think, that's it. So yeah, Halloween coming up, hopefully that'll be awesome. A lot of great new art. I think you're really gonna be happy. We might see, a new area or two during the rollout, depending on how everything goes. And that means both on your side and on my side, between the choices and me getting all the coding we need done. And Andrea's side quest, once I figure out how deep we're going to go on that, how far down the biochem rabbit hole we go. Then the hacking revamp is the next big thing on my plate. after Halloween, but I'm not going to think about that too much until then. But yeah, thanks for listening and thanks for playing. Thanks so much for donating and thanks, and I really mean this from the very bottom of my vague black heart. I really appreciate everyone, being understanding while I was, busy dealing with my personal issues. I have read enough webcomics and played enough, games designed by volunteers, to know how, annoying it is when people get, sideswiped by their own stuff and, sort of get flaky and you don't want to hold it against them because they've got legitimate problems, but it is really still pretty annoying, that I really just want to say that I appreciate everyone, being understanding about that and not projecting their annoyance too much in my direction, because that's really helped. Thanks. And everyone have a good one.